Hello and welcome to Connected episode 332. It's made possible by our sponsors this week, Hover and Mack Weldon. My name is Stephen Hackett and I am joined by Mr. Federico Vitici.
Hello, my name is Federico Vitici.
Hi.
I don't know, you just say my name is and I figured I should say the same. Hi.
Okay. You're Federico Vitici?
Yes, it's me.
We're also joined by Mike Hurley.
Hello, my name is Federico Vitici.
Wait.
Yeah, I know, right?
But then we have a problem.
You weren't expecting that, were you?
Steven, you need to make us solve some kind of puzzle or like a captcha to prove that we are.
We're the Spider-Man meme now.
Yes.
We're both Federico. So, Steven, you have to choose which one's the real Federico.
Or which one's the real Mike. Maybe that's the actual way to do it.
Maybe Mike is like an entity that doesn't actually exist. It's more like a state of mind.
I'm like Ditto. I take on the form of people around
Steven, what
me.
Is Ditto?
I don't know. It's a Pokemon.
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess because it was the two of you. But I was who I was really thinking about was Kirby. Isn't Kirby the Nintendo?
That also,
who can like
you know
pull your powers?
It actually sort of works too. Because
because
they're both
pink and kind of blob like, and they both like Kirby's thing is that he eats people and then can absorb their power, which is so gross and horrifying.
Yes.
Kirby is like a terrifying character, really.
Made
like,
cute.
Kirby's power is so upsetting.
Yes. But in a way, so imagine like if Mike ate me and then took onto my semblance, that would be sort of like what Kirby does.
But the Ditto is better because Ditto just looks at something and then can become it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
It's not as gross.
Yeah, that's less upsetting than having to eat it.
Right.
Yeah, I don't want to do that.
The digestion is really what makes the difference.
Mm-hmm.
Should we do follow up?
Oh, please.
I just wanted to point people to the end of last week's show where I had real-time follow up, but of course it was too late because people had already commented to me as they were listening to the show. So Reminders has had sorting on macOS for quite a while, but it's not. Remember I talked about like task with no times, go at the top, all that stuff? That's all true of the old Mac version of sorting and reminders. What's new in iOS 14.5 and macOS 11.3, their respective betas, is that the sorting works the same way. So the sorting on iOS does it the way I want it to, and the Mac follows suit. So that's weird. It's always weird that the Mac version had sorting before the iOS version, even though it got some things wrong about it. But they're moving to unify how the two work. Now, as far as I can tell, the newer betas don't solve my badging problem, but I filed a feedback, and hopefully that will spur some discussion.
You're very well behaved.
Me?
Mm-hmm. To file a feedback.
Yeah.
Like a good testing board.
Well, it was a rock that I tied a note to and then threw it over the wall at Apple Park.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. Like, whatever you got to get it done, get it done.
That's right. You'd have to have a heck of an arm to throw something over the building into the middle.
Isn't that like an
Olympic sport? I guarantee
like an Olympic
that lasers
sports?
Would appear and just shoot it out of the sky. You're not going to get it over there.
Defense lasers?
Just straight out there.
Like a drone defense system.
Yep.
Kind of like that.
We spoke about Carrot Weather 5 last week, and we were talking about the various weather services we use. Listener Brian wrote in to tell us about a website called Forecast Advisor. Now, this only works in the U.S., so if you're outside of the U.S., sorry about this, but if you're in the U.S., you can enter your zip code, like I'm entering mine right now, and you can compare forecast accuracy for your area over the last month and the last year. So it turns out, for me, I've been using AccuWeather, but AccuWeather is only about 80% accurate over the last month and the last year.
That's unacceptable.
Yeah. They should call it like kinda weather or something.
80 weather.
80 weather.
And so the Weather Underground, the Weather Channel, and Forca, F-O-R-E-C-A?
Forca.
Forca. It's a Forca. I wanted a spooner.
Oh, oh wow. Whoa. Oh, hello.
Hi. Are you Federico?
Prove it.
We're all Federico now.
So anyway, I've switched to this because it seems to be the most accurate. And it is funny in Carrot Weather, if you switch between them, sometimes how different the forecast can be.
The forecast. Mm.
The forecast.
The forecast.
Okay. I mean, this is a nice idea. It's like a fact checking for weather forecasts.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. But again, only in the US, so that's a bummer for some people.
Twitter should start applying labels to these other services, right? So like AccuWeather tweets and it's like, oh, this is only correct 80% of the time.
Oh, like they did to, what's his name, who they kicked off Twitter?
Yeah, that guy.
That guy. What is it?
They should start doing that for weather services now too.
Mike.
This follow-up did sting a little bit, honestly, mm-hmm. because I was the one who wanted this. And I can't, and it's US only. I was the one of the three of us that wanted to know if there was a better service than the one I was using. But, you know,
sorry,
can't help that Brian did what Brian could, and this is the best that Brian could do.
Mike, you have been on a vision quest to try to understand how the Apple Watch unlock works with masks mm-hmm. in the betas. Do you have any new visions from your quest?
I still don't have the answer that I want. So what I want to know is exactly how Apple is doing the authentication for Face ID. Alex wrote in to say that they've been able to basically just get it to unlock on any face as long as he was holding the phone, basically. So it seems like it's the proximity thing. So it seems very much like that's the case, right? That like it's all proximity based. But I would love, I was talking about this on Upgrade with Jason because Jason was doing similar testing too. I would love Apple to publish a white paper and say what they're doing here. Like, I want, and it, again, it's not that I'm like trying to be like, oh, this isn't safe. I just want to know. I'm just curious. Like, what is it? And like, what kind of level of security do they deem this feature as? Like, is it less secure than Touch ID? Like, what is it? Do they really believe in their proximity stuff that it's better than that, or it's, you know, it's like I'm just intrigued. I would just like to know, and I'm also intrigued to see what the kind of so Federico, when you set this up,
yeah,
did the iOS talk you through it at all?
No, you just go to settings and you flip a switch.
See, I'm intrigued to see if in the final version, if there isn't like an onboarding of any kind to explain this to people or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because it's a really cool feature, but it's potentially less secure than your passcode.
Right.
I don't know.
Well, I guess once iOS 14.5 comes out, they will update the security white paper that they already have on the website with a new section for this. You still have to make sure that your watch is authenticated, of course. So yeah, you're giving up on some level of security, but it still relies on the fact that you are wearing the Apple Watch. So, I mean, yeah, technically somebody could like forcibly grab you and force you to authenticate just by the fact that you're wearing an Apple Watch.
But at that point, you've got all kinds of...
But exactly. At that point, you have all kinds of problems. In more realistically speaking, it could also mean that if you go to sleep with your watch on, whoever kind of, you know, person lives with you, for example, they could grab the phone at night and unlock it just by using proximity.
But again...
you have, you know, trust issues and all that. So
you have a different set of problems.
You have a different set of problems.
Point.
So
yeah.
Once you enable this, very convenient. Just make sure, you know, be aware of your surroundings. I guess if you wear the Apple Watch at night and you know when you go out and about, just the people around you may be able to authenticate your phone, to unlock your phone, just by, you know, taking advantage of the fact that you're wearing an Apple Watch. Essentially,
Matt's saying in the members Discord that if you use sleep mode, it doesn't work during sleep mode.
I was literally about to say that. Thank you, Matt. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah,
that makes a lot of sense.
You might not use sleep mode, right? Like, it, I don't know.
Right,
it's up to you if you use that feature or not. But that's good design. to put that in there. If you remember last week, we were talking about Dan Riccio was going to be moving on. Apple announced that he was going on a special project, and we were talking about what that could have been. And I remember saying, I don't think it was a car like everybody else thought, and I figured it was more likely he was going to be working on the AR and VR project. Mark Gurman is reporting in Bloomberg that that's exactly what Dan Riccio is going to be moving on to, is helping Apple kind of realize their hardware goals for the AR-VR project. So he's kind of helping oversee a lot of that now, apparently, according to Mark Gurman. This makes way more sense than a car to me. And he may work on, if they're working on some kind of car project, that might be a thing that he does next. But it really seems like it would more likely be whatever the next big project is, rather than like the next big project.
Some articles put this in context as that he stepped down to do this, which, I mean, he was in charge of basically all hardware engineering, it seemed like, or a lot of it, and is now just doing this. But I don't know if Apple sees that as a step down. I feel like at Apple, and from what I've read about the beginning of the iPhone and iPad and other projects, to be moved from your regular work to secret project, right, where no one knows really what it is and you sort of disappear for a while, that seems like an honor within Apple. So I don't know if stepping down or it being a demotion, that sort of thing, is quite right. It's definitely not how I view it. I view it as he's going to go do this future thing and let Turnus take over everything else that's up and running. I don't know. That framing just sort of struck me as weird.
I think that there's two ways to look at it, right? Like, one, we know from what Apple said that he is reporting directly to Tim Cook in his new role, Dan Riccio, running this special project, the AR-VR stuff. We assume he probably reported straight to Tim Cook anyway, because I don't think that there is anybody else. Like, previously, Dan Riccio may have reported to Johnny Ive, but I don't think that there's anyone that fills that kind of role anymore. I don't know, though. But I understand how some people refer to it as a stepping down, because it's surely less work. Than running all hardware. Because as the senior vice president of hardware engineering, this AR-VR hardware would have come under his purview anyway, right? Because it's hardware. But now he's going to be moving on to kind of like help shore up this entire part of the division. He's reporting directly to Tim Cook, but you assume that he now has a much more focused role. So I know why people call it stepping down, but I also understand why you're saying like it doesn't seem like it would be stepping down, because this is, I mean, I'm sure Apple is currently trying to set this up as like their next like huge project, right? Like big as the iPhone project or whatever is what I assume is what they want this, whatever this endeavor is to be. So being responsible for helping bring that to market, I mean, that could put your name in the history books. I have a quick aside.
Okay.
Something I noticed while preparing for the show. I love Safari Reader View.
Okay.
It's so good. I use this when I'm preparing for shows. So even though I use Reader, R-E-E-D-E-R, Reader, for RSS to like look through all my feeds, I typically don't read stuff there for show prep. Like I read things there just for interest. But if I want to read something for preparing for the show, like all of the links that I put into our document today, I send them out to Apple Notes. And then I will then open them when I'm sitting down at my Mac. Some websites that I genuinely love their reporting and they're awesome. Too many ads on them, like just to the point where it becomes difficult to read them. That's where I have an issue. Like sometimes I'm trying to I can't even read the stuff, or what's even worse, auto playing video and all that kind of stuff. I love Safari Reader View because it works very well. And my favorite feature about it, the main reason I wanted to bring it up today, is I love so much that you can automatically turn it on for some websites. I don't do this for all websites, but there's some that are so bad that I do. And I just really appreciate that feature. Because like reader views and stuff like that, very normal, right? Like they've been around since like I guess Instapaper was the first, right? Of these kinds of things.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if you go way back, like Delicious is kind of that, but
well, back then there used to be like some kind of dispute between Instapaper and Pocket before it was called Pocket. It was called Read It Later.
Yeah,
but I believe that the text parser was an Instapaper thing.
So that's kind of what I'm talking about, is like the taking a web page and stripping all of the bad stuff out of it so you just get the text. But like, so it's been around for a while, but what I really like about ReaderView is that you can just say, hey, for every time I click on a link from this domain, just turn it on. It's a great feature. Just a great feature of Safari.
Yeah, and I love how you can, I believe it was added last year, the settings that you can like enable it on a per website basis. It's really well done. Like you can say some websites I always want to open in this mode. And like, for example, there's a few blogs that I enable content blockers for in the Safari settings. And I also switch to reader view by default. So as soon as I open like an article from those websites, stops whatever the content blockers need to stop. And it also switches to reader view. And it's really nicely done. And it also integrates with shortcuts. It's one of the Safari features that you can also activate from shortcuts. Really well done. Too bad that the reader view, like, it had so many updates, especially over the past couple of years. But the feature that could take advantage of it the most, which is Safari Reading List, has basically languished for 6, 7, probably 8 years at this point, without virtually any updates whatsoever. So reader view, lots of good progress there. Reading list, kind of a shame. It's been the same since I don't think it's an exaggeration to say since iOS 7, it's basically stayed the same.
It feels like one of those features that they decided to do, and it's like, oh, this is a good idea, and then maybe came to the realization that pretty much everybody that wants a service like this has something that they use, you know?
At some point, they added an option to automatically download the content of those stories, but when I looked at it, it was real hit or miss as to whether it actually worked.
Yeah, one time I was going to WWDC, I was so happy that I had the reading list set to automatically download stories for me, and so I get on a plane and I enable airplane mode. I'm like, okay, yes, fantastic, I'm gonna read a bunch of articles, and then I open Safari and nothing was saved offline.
I think I remember this.
I was very sad. So we're gonna have to revisit this topic. I think I'm in between places at the moment when it comes to reading things later. I'm very undecided because on one hand, I like to use Reader, the RSS client, and its Read Later integration. So you can save things for later. And it strips the text with its own specific like text parser. But then if you want, you can also reopen articles in Safari View Controller within Reader. So that's cool. And it syncs with iCloud, and it's got shortcuts integration. It's really nicely done. On the other hand, a couple of months ago, when I got the Kindle, basically, I signed up for this service. I'm actually like a patron on Patreon for this service. It's called Push to Kindle, and it's this little bookmarklet that lets you save any article from the web to your Kindle as like a personal document. That's in theory what they're called in the Kindle system. So anything that I find on the web, I push this little bookmarklet in Safari, and the text parser is really, really, really well done. I think it's the best one I've tried, like better than Safari Reader, better than Instapaper, better than Reader. And it sends that document to your Kindle. The problem is I love reading on the Kindle, and I love the text extraction that the Push to Kindle service does. The problem is I miss the fact that if I want to then take something from that article and, I don't know, tweet it or link it on Mac Stories, it becomes a problem because that article is then on my Kindle. So I got to find the article on my iPad again and find a bit of...
You need a reverse service that pushes Kindle to the web.
Pull from Kindle.
And now that you mention it, I've actually been thinking through this like over the holiday break. There is that kind of service. Something called Readwise. I don't know if you guys have ever seen this. I think David Sparks mentioned this recently. It's a service that aggregates all of your highlights from your Kindle library. And it's got Notion integration. I don't use Notion, but I know that a bunch of folks use it because of that.
Of course it does.
It's got Notion. No, it's got a bunch of export options. And it's got a native app as well as a website.
Uh-huh.
The thing is, Readwise only works for actual Kindle books. It doesn't work for personal documents that you save to your Kindle. Mm. So even if I highlight something in an article that I saved to my Kindle library, it doesn't sync up with Readwise because it's not a book. It's a personal document, and Readwise does not support personal documents. So like I said, I'm in between places at the moment.
Do either of you use like a Instapaper or Pocket or anything now?
3 months ago, I went through all of them again. And each one of them had something that I was like, I like it, but this thing I'm not really sure about. Like Instapaper, what turned me away from it was the infrequent updates and sort of the sense that, I don't know, it just feels like it could go away any moment. I don't know. It's, you know, it's been through a bunch of, you know, different ownerships over the years, and I don't know. I just saw in the release notes that it, like, last update 1 year ago, and I was like, oh boy. So I looked at Pocket, and the thing with Pocket is that they really try. It's owned by Mozilla now, so that's cool.
I always forget that.
Yeah, but they really try to sell you on the discovering more articles thing. Like, I don't want to open something and be, you know, and see all of these different recommendations for, hey, discover more articles. I already got like hundreds of things in my backlog. I don't need to.
Remember when Evernote started doing that?
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like, hey, your notes about this. Maybe you want to read this from the New York Times.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I don't.
Yeah. And also, Pocket is like very non-native in the way that it looks. So yeah. That was out. Then I started looking at this other application that nobody sees. It's one of those things that I discovered on the App Store. Nobody really knows about it. It's called Articles Plus, I think. It's got a blue icon with the shape of an A, of the letter A. And it's really nicely done. It's got a subscription model. There was something that did not convince me. And so it was down to Reader and something else. I don't. But I tried them all, and it was like, ultimately, I really like what Reader is doing. ReadKit recently came out. So ReadKit, it used to be a Mac app that came out in 2012 or 2013, back when I used to write about Mac apps.
Yeah.
And it was like an alternative to Reader for Mac back in the day. Then it sort of disappeared. The developer got in touch with me again last month and said, hey, I've been working on a major revamp of ReadKit. It's coming back on the App Store, and there's going to be an iPhone and iPad version now. It's like, great, yes.
It's nice.
It's very nice. It's got, I think you can log in with your Instapaper and Pocket credentials as well, but I still kind of prefer Reader. And the way that just Reader has got something, I talked about this on App Stories a few months ago. It's got that special something. I don't know if it's the animations or the design or the speed.
So good.
So I don't know. I got to decide what I want to do, really. Maybe I'm just going to stick with the Kindle. It's not like I find myself having to highlight things and export them, you know, that frequently.
Steven, do you use anything?
Yeah, I use Reader for RSS, and then for saving things later, I use GoodLinks.
GoodLinks. Oh, that's a good one. I saw that you wrote about this in the Six Colors newsletters.
Yeah, I like GoodLinks.
And it uses a Safari View Controller if you want to open an article, right?
Yes, and you can force it. So you have Safari Reader mode there. I think you can force it into Reader mode.
You can force it, yeah. John really likes GoodLinks, also because of the shortcuts integration that it's got. And I think it also has like custom actions, right? You can make your own custom.
Yes.
Yeah. I got to look at it.
I don't know why. Like, I've heard people talk about GoodLinks for ages. For some reason, it never clicked in my head that it was like an Instapaper thing.
Yeah, it is.
I always kind of thought it was like a Pinboard thing.
You know, there's still plenty of folks who use Pinboard. That surprises me.
I did for a long time, but gave up on it.
But like, that's what I thought GoodLinks was. I thought it was just like, you just saved links and then you went and did something with them. I didn't know that you could like read in it as well.
Yeah.
Okay. But this feels like GoodLinks feels a bit like a mixture between a Pinboard and a Instapaper, right? Like kind of like at its core, because you, from the way they got it set up, it kind of looks like you keep things in it forever and you like tag them and stuff.
You can, or you can archive them. I don't use any tags. I just have an unread list, and right. then I mark it as red, and it just goes in the red list forever.
I think you can do it either way.
Additional
question for both of you, just because I'm not this kind of person, so I'm intrigued. Like, so you're going through your day.
Yeah.
You're seeing things. You're putting them in good links. You're putting them in read later or whatever.
Yeah.
When do you actually read these things?
Later.
Well, okay. So for me,
obviously later.
For me, it's two very specific moments. If it's something that I know I want to link on Mac Stories, I'll save also a reminder for a very specific time of day. So like if I know I'm going to link this like in the afternoon, I'm going to sit down at 5 p.m., read it, and then contextually to that, I'm also going to do a link post on Mac Stories. But usually it's before going to bed.
Yeah, if there's something I'm going to link, I'll make a task. If it's something that I want to save for a show, I have a way to save things directly into Craft for future show notes.
Yes.
Good links is mostly like non-tech stuff that I come across that, again, I want to read later. And usually it's in the evenings or on the weekends.
Yep.
And it's great on the iPad.
So you've settled on Craft for show links now?
I have all my work notes in Craft, all my personal notes in Apple Notes.
I have all my notes in Craft, and we also do our show notes in Craft.
Mm.
No, don't think about it, Mike.
Oh, I am thinking about it, though.
We've been doing App Stories and Unwind in Craft for almost 3 months at this point.
I don't imagine show notes, like, because what I just did something to our document that Google Docs is best for. Like, I just picked something up and moved it, and I know with Craft that's going to take a little bit to refresh, and someone might have moved, like, gone straight into that topic, and I'd intended to move. Like, the thing about Google Docs, which makes it what it is like, it's instant. The changes are instant. You can watch me typing, right?
For sure.
And once you're used to that, if you work that way, it's hard to move away from. Like, if you have the kind of show notes that are, like, that you don't move them around a lot or whatever, then fine. But I think for this show, for many of my shows, we've gotten maybe too used to it, right? Like, maybe if I was starting something from scratch, it wouldn't be so, I wouldn't be so used to it. So Google Docs, I do struggle with, but Craft, like, it's interesting to me. Like, I keep my eye on it, and I do use it, but I don't use it to the extent that you guys are. And I'm intrigued. It's just I have a lot of stuff that I still want to move into it, but I'm still waiting for them to add some features that I want, like tables.
Tables
is my thing. I want tables. I also want better outlining support. I need to contact them about that at some point. They don't do a very good job with, like, keyboard control of outlining.
Yeah, indenting and
my indent right and indent left.
Indent, that's what it was. Indent right, indent left. Yeah,
they don't do a very good job with that, and they have a lot of work that they need to do if you are a bulleted list type person like I am, especially. Like, I write pretty much everything in outline format, or loose outline format, and while they support it, it's slow. It's very slow.
And they recently, just a few days ago, they added this new toggle list mode, which at first I thought it was like folding, and it's basically the opposite of...
I could not understand it. I don't know.
Yeah, it's... So if anybody from Craft is listening to this, I don't think you did an excellent job with the toggle list mode, because, like, it defies the expectations of anybody who's ever used any folding system in a text editor before. My default interpretation of that was like, oh, great, I can now fold headings, which is usually what you do, like in an outliner or in a markdown editor that has support for folding, like, say, editorial years ago or task paper. You usually fold the heading. So if you do like an heading, like an H2 or H3, then you can fold it, and it folds the entire section contained within that heading, right? Within that section. Or in an outliner, you can fold anything, right? For example, in Omni Outliner, you enter things in a list, and then you decide what you want to open and what you want to fold. Here, and I still struggle to understand what the toggle list thing does, but it seems that you have to write first, and then you apply the toggle list format, and then you can fold. It's very strange and very weird. And I spent 20 minutes trying to understand, and then I texted John and was like, hey, do you know how this works? Because I really do. And usually, like, and I mean, I don't mean this to brag, but like, and I've tried many, many, many text-based apps over the years. And usually when I don't understand something, it's not a good sign. So I got to send them some kind of feedback, I think.
Yeah, I tried it out and I could not
see,
work out
yeah.
how to do it. Like, yeah. I don't know why I felt stupid, right? Because it's like, what's wrong with me? Why can't I work this out?
Because I was pressing the little arrow and then I started typing and the arrow disappeared. I was like, wait, what's happening here? In any case.
Cool app. It is cool. I look forward to the day when I can use it more. But because I'm very confident that the things that I want added are things they will add and improve. So I use it a lot for a specific type of thing, but I would like to move more stuff into it, like preparing my links and stuff for shows, because it seems good for that.
Let's take a break. And then I have a proposal before we move on. So don't jump into the next topic yet.
I accept. Yes, Stephen, right. I say yes. I will marry you.
All it took was for you to pretend to be him, and now he's ready to marry you.
I know.
I'm ready. I'm yours, babe.
This episode of Connected is brought to you by Hover, one of RelayFM's longest-running sponsors. When you have that big idea, where do you go? Well, your business or project or creative outlet, they all need a domain name. That's where these things start. Hover has over 300 domain name extensions to choose from. So no matter what you want to build, there's a domain name waiting for you. They have excellent technical support to answer any questions that you may have. They're dedicated to getting you online, not upselling you. This means they have a really intuitive user experience and things just work straight out of the box. They offer free Whois privacy so the bad guys don't get your information. And they have monthly sales on popular top-level domains, so it's easy to see why Hover is the popular choice for people starting businesses. All of my domains are at Hover. One of the things that I love about is how easy and fast it is to register something. So you can go, if you already have something in mind, enter it in. If it's not available, they will make a bunch of suggestions. And very often those suggestions are exactly what I'm looking for. And it's all really fast. So if someone says something ridiculous on a podcast, I can buy a domain for it while we're still recording. It's not, probably not, wasn't Hover's goal when they built that feature, but I appreciate how fast it is. Buy your domain and start using it today. Go to hover.com/connected and get a 10% discount on all new purchases. Once again, that's hover.com/connected. Make a name for yourself with Hover. Our thanks to Hover for their support of the show and Relay FM.
Can I just give a bit of real-time follow-up real quick? Is that okay? Just before your proposal, before
sure.
we move on from it?
Okay, yes.
Because I was trying out the craft thing again, the toggling thing.
Yeah.
I was on my iPhone.
Yeah.
And it seems like the way that you get the little... Basically, it's all... The problem is the indenting.
Right.
Because to get it to, like, nest... You have to do indenting. And the one of the reasons that the nesting doesn't work very well is because they have to work on their indenting. So that these things actually seem to go hand in hand.
Okay.
Please give us your proposal.
We have five mini topics, and then one regular topic, which isn't even all that long, I don't think. I don't think it's like a traditional full-length topic. So my suggestion is... that I spin a wheel, and a wheel that's 1 through 6, I already have it prepared, and then we do that corresponding number of tiny topic. So if I roll a 4, we talk about what is labeled number 4 in the show notes, and we do 3 of these, we take a break, and then we do the last 3, and then we're done.
Okay.
I just feel like we need some spontaneity today.
All right.
Okay.
You just wanted to spin the wheel.
Yes.
I mean, you know, some people spend a bunch of time like putting them in the right order.
Trying to understand what's the flow of a show, trying to understand like what topic follows one another, and then comes... Like,
I have to tear up my entire script now.
Then comes in Stephen Hackett spinning his wheel just for the funsies. Okay.
all my jokes are going to be in the wrong place. They don't make any sense.
Like, and you can say, like, as I mentioned before. No, because you didn't mention it, but you can't say that. Okay.
Oh, boy.
We're going off script. Okay.
So we scroll down number 4.
Oh, well, isn't that a coincidence? You said number 4 as an example, and then number 4 is the first one. Just say that you really want to talk about this thing. It's fine.
Uh-huh. I don't care about this thing. I don't care about this thing. Tiny topic number 4, another weird charging device. So our friends at Satechi are back. They will basically put a USB port and a charging pad on anything.
On anything.
Anything.
They'll just, you can't move. Wait, for USB-C ports at Satechi. I saw this on Mac Rumors and just thought that I feel like over the last few months especially, I just keep bringing increasingly more peculiar charging devices to the show, but I actually thought this one's kind of ingenious. It's like a little, I don't know, it's maybe the size of a box of matches or something, you know, maybe somewhere between a box of matches and a pack of playing cards. And it's just this little piece of aluminium. On one side is an Apple Watch charging puck, and on the other side is a rectangular Qi charger that is perfectly sized for an AirPods case to go on. And because it's USB-C, it's like bidirectional, not bidirectional. What do you call it when you can put it in either way around? Maybe it's just
reversible?
That you can put it in either way.
Reversible.
Around. Reversible. There you go. So the idea would be you'd plug this into the side of your laptop or to your iPad if it was laying down, and then you could, if one side, you could charge your Apple Watch, flip it over, charge your AirPods. It's $50. You can only buy it in the Apple Store. It's colored to look like the color of a MacBook. I just thought it was like a cool little gadget.
So,
and that's the end of my point on this. Do either of you think this is cool at all?
No.
Well,
okay.
So,
when do you need charge? Okay, here's the AirPod thing I get.
I struggle to imagine the sort of a emergency situation you may find yourself in that you really need this accessory.
Yeah. Would you need to like charge your Apple Watch on the go?
I mean, I don't know what it's like for you people that charge your Apple Watches. I don't know. Maybe you need to, you know, you're sleeping in it or whatever and you need, I don't know. I don't know what it's like for people like you who wear Apple Watches all the time. Maybe you need that.
I think it's cool. So the reversible design, I think it's really cool.
Honestly, that's why I brought, because I just thought it was kind of ingenious. I just thought it was an ingenious little design.
It is. It's very compact. It's got a single USB-C port, plug. I think it's very nicely done as an object. I just, I have doubts about the practicality of it. It's like, most of the time, I charge my AirPods on my main charger and the watch in the morning. It's like, do I need another, what is essentially like a little dongle? Do I need another of these things in my life? And right now, maybe the answer is no, but also because I'm spending a lot of time at home. So maybe if I was traveling more, I just think that a lot of these accessories that we're seeing lately, they would make a lot more sense in a COVID-free world.
Yes, of course. But I mean, like this looks to me like a really good, I work all day at the coffee shop kind of,
yes, yes,
kind of thing, right? Because it's like, oh, I need to charge my AirPods. I'll just put them on there.
Yeah.
Nice. Right.
But I struggle to imagine, I think we're all having this problem right now. I struggle to remember what that feels like at this point, you know? Like, hey, remember when you could go like and work from a place without any restrictions whatsoever? This makes a lot of sense, and it made a lot of sense 2 years ago. Now, I think the concept is very cool. The need for it may be limited. I don't know.
Ian has made a very good point in the Discord that this is kind of like a shelf, and you love shelves. Maybe this is for you. It's a shelf your other devices.
It is a shelf.
I'm buying 5 of them. I'm gonna put them all over my house.
It does look like a mini shelf for your iPad.
It's a little shelf. It's a charging shelf.
Okay, I take back everything I said.
And you can use it on the iPad. Although, like, ultimately less usable on the iPad because it has to be, like, flat on the table.
If,
right?
If how everyone uses their iPad,
if you could change the angle of the thing, like if you could rotate the shelf, now that would be cool.
That'll be the pro version next year for $89.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
I guess the Apple Watch is probably good, right? Because it's magnetic, so that's going to work. Yeah, but for the AirPods, it's tricky.
All right. That was Tiny Topic number 4.
Spin the wheel.
Spin the wheel again. Number 5.
Oh, well, that's stupid. We're just moving in the order of the show now. We just went from 4 to 5.
You complained about one way. You complained about the other way.
Do you remember when Apple added, was it called Smart Shuffle?
It was Genius. What? Genius Playlist.
Genius Shuffle.
Oh,
Genius
Playlist.
I always loved that feature where because I think I remember Steve Jobs describing it as the thing about Shuffle is that it is completely shuffling. So sometimes you will get two artists that were the same one after another in a playlist of random music because it's purely random. So then Apple created Genius Shuffle where that wouldn't happen. And I just thought it was just such a great little software design. I always really liked that. So you should put Genius Shuffle in your wheel there, Stephen.
So what was the tiny topic? Number 5? Apple is coming after Waze. This is an article over on Mac Stories by John.
One True John.
One True John. OTJ. OTJ, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, One True John.
Call it that.
So in Waze, you've been able to report things like an accident or a speed trap, right? Where the cop is behind a tree, he's going to catch you speeding right at the sign.
Problems on the roads, there's a pothole on the road and whatever.
Yeah, all that stuff, right? And it goes into the Waze database, and everyone using Waze is alerted, and it can reshape traffic because of that. In the iOS 14.5 beta, Apple Maps has had accident, hazard, and speed check reporting added to the phone, to CarPlay, and to Siri, which is pretty cool. And so if you are out driving about, you can hit the report button. And as John points out, and I agree with this, in CarPlay, it's on the far right-hand side, which is the opposite side of the driver in the U.S. It's kind of hard to reach, and it's a really small target. But you can use Siri as well. And so you can report one of these things, and it will mark where you are and feed into the giant algorithm that makes people drive around with Apple Maps.
Hmm.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
As I don't know. In other countries where you drive on the other side of the road, does the CarPlay UI flip?
Yes.
I think it does.
It does. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, where the dock is on the right-hand side if you drive on.
What if your car goes over the line of where no, I guess it doesn't matter, right? You're always on that kind. Anyway.
What? That's not how you drive?
Never mind. Don't worry about what I just said. Forget I said anything. Said
if you go over the line, you're going to die.
Does it flip over? I think speed check is really weird to add in here.
Why?
By Apple explicitly. Because you only need to know about speed checks if you're going over the speed limit.
Well...
No, that's the only reason, right?
Well,
so it seems kind of strange that you choose 3 things, and one of them is, help me break the law, right?
It's a way for people to know where speed cameras or speed checking sort of checkpoints usually are installed.
But you only need to know that if you're going too fast.
I don't want to say things that will be misinterpreted, so yes.
yes, that's correct.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean,
it's a way for people to know.
I think it's good when these devices or sensors, they tell you hey, you're going over the speed limit. I think it's useful to know in case people don't know.
I think, okay, I'm going to try to generalize my thought.
Yeah, please.
I think a lot of people in Italy in my country, a lot of people would agree that sometimes speed limits are a bit unrealistic.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, a speed limit exists, but I challenge you to drive on any road and find that the speed limit is more of a technicality. Like if you tried, like, let's be honest, if you try to drive by the speed limit in Rome, there's going to be people honking at you all day.
Yeah.
You can do that. I mean, technically, the law is by your side if you do that. But in the practicality of the day-to-day life in Rome, you're going to have a bad time in traffic if you do that. And I'm not saying that that breaking the law is right. I'm just saying what most people do.
Right. Yeah, I mean, also the Discord. The Discord is currently giving me a taste of what my Twitter mentions are going to look like for the next few days, because people seem incensed that I even suggested such a thing. But it just seemed, it just stood out to me as like a little peculiarity, right? But I get it. Like, I completely understand what you're saying, but at the same time, it's just a little bit weird to me, like, as a thing.
You may have an actual emergency for which you need to, like, let's say you gotta go to the hospital very quickly, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, in theory, you're breaking the law if you go over the speed limit. But maybe if you know that there's an automated speed camera installed, you can be mindful of that just for those 30 seconds. Just a silly example, right? And then there's the whole question of, are speed cameras actually legal? And there was a whole thing in Italy a few years ago where they needed to pass regulations for which you need to signal X kilometers before the camera that you will find a speed camera soon. And so we have all these signs on our roads saying, starting now for the next 10 kilometers, you're going to find speed cameras. Because basically the government was fining people and nobody was paying those speed tickets, basically. And so they passed regulations because people were saying, I was going over the limit because of X and Y reasons, so you can issue this speed ticket to me. It was a whole thing. So yeah, the speed camera situation is complicated and it changes country by country. I guess the simple reality of it is a lot of these services like Waze and back in the day, there used to be like the TomTom thing, right?
Yeah, poor TomTom.
Yeah. It also had this feature, like crowdsourced speed camera databases.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's doing it, so I figured Apple said, why not?
Yeah, it's just, I think the thing that was peculiar to me is I was just like questioning the legality of such a thing. And because, I mean, I don't know, right?
I think it's weird that a company as big as Apple maybe is doing this in a very
That's why it's strange as well, because they only have three options, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So one third of their options is help people get around speed limits or like, you know, and so, yeah, I just found that it was just intriguing to me one of the three that they added, when there are legitimately like many more of these types of things that you could have. Like Waze has loads of them.
Like what?
Well, you can have lots of things about like issues with roads, right? Or you could have, I don't know, incorrect directions. I don't know. But anyway, nevertheless, how many there are, it just stood out to me. Maybe I'm terrible because I don't drive a car, so I don't understand how speed limits really work in the real world, but it seemed weird to me.
One iPhone has many sales.
Many or mini?
I can't pronounce those words differently.
No, try again.
Small is mini.
Okay.
More than is... few is mini. I can't, there's no difference.
It's the same.
His mouth cannot make that sound. Okay.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Okay, so are you feeling sad about this report, Stephen?
Let me talk about the report.
Okay.
And then I'll share my feelings.
Okay.
This was a report by JP Morgan analyst William Yang, who said that the smaller iPhone 12, but especially the iPhone 12 mini, has underperformed, and it might lead to Apple stopping production in the second quarter. There was a report earlier, maybe even the end of last year, that the 12 mini, that Apple was slowing down that manufacturing line to adjust. in the quarterly calls, a couple weeks ago, Tim Cook said that the iPhone cycle this time has been really driven by the 12 Pro and 12 Pro Max. People seem really excited about those. And I think you can add all this up and say that, okay, maybe the 12 Mini is the worst selling of the new phones. In fact, this report says that the iPhone 12 Mini accounted for just 5% of overall sales of new iPhones in the U.S. during the first half of January. Now, I don't know why you picked the first half of January, because people already bought all their phones for the holidays, but it's the time that was sampled for this. But yeah, 12 Mini may not be a big seller.
Yeah, I mean, there could be like a lot of reasons that January particularly could be tough. But, you know, it's probably still approximate. And also as well, this isn't the first time we've heard this.
Mm-mm.
I will ask you, 5% of sales, the iPhone 12 Mini apparently, let's just assume that this is somewhat accurate. Are you surprised by this number? Does this seem unexpected? Like, what would you both have imagined the makeup would look like percentage-wise for the Mini?
I figured it would be the smallest selling, but I didn't. 5% seems really low to me. Now, there's the factors we already mentioned. There's also the factor that TJ pointed out in the Discord, is that the iPhone SE 2 came out in the spring, and there may have been a lot of people who would have done the 12 Mini, but they were afraid there wasn't ever going to be a small iPhone again, so they went to the SE 2 as a holdout against larger phones. And so maybe of the potential 12 Mini market is tied up in the SE 2, but I can't imagine
that's the reason people buy that phone. I mean, I don't know, right? Like, I could imagine the argument for the SE is that it's the cheapest iPhone.
And it still has Touch ID that some people really want who don't want Face ID. So the SE 2 has a lot going for it, and I think the overlap between the 12 Mini and the SE 2, like, I think it's real, but it's not one-to-one by any means.
Federico, do you have an expectation? Does 5% seem low?
It seems low, and I think this phone should go away.
Oh.
This is one of those things where people think that they want a small phone, and then when they actually get it, they realize, well, this is now too small.
This is good. So, Stephen, within our next like two or three topics, you have to say something that's going to make people mad. So start thinking about that. Because I have speed traps. Federico has small phones shouldn't exist. So now you need to think. Mm-hmm. So get working on that.
Well, we'll see where the wheel takes us. But
no, I think there's a legitimate niche of people who want a small phone.
Correct.
But I think it's a very small niche of people, and their numbers seems to
and
be suggesting that. And it's getting smaller. And
I mean, again, pure anecdote, right? Like, a lot of this stuff is pure anecdote, but I know people in my life who always wanted small phones, then they ended up getting a big phone and now wouldn't go back.
Yeah. And I think the volume of articles and hot takes about small phones is... what's the word when something is like the complete opposite of something else?
Antithesis?
No, there's an expression that I'm thinking of.
Oh.
Something like disproportionate or something. So basically, the more people, like a lot of people talk about it, nobody actually wants it. This is what I'm trying to say. Like, you see all these articles, all these stories, all these hot takes, and you think, oh, this is going to be popular because so many people are talking about it. But in the real world...
yeah, finally, Apple have made a small phone. Finally, right? Like, that's all, you know.
Finally, Apple has made it. And then you hear podcasters saying, yes, there's going to be a small phone. And you think, oh, there's all this discussion. This is going to be the hot new thing, and everybody's going to buy this phone. And then you see these numbers, and you're like, well, you realize maybe the world has moved on from small phones, which is not an attack on the small phone itself or the people who want one. It's just
small phone community.
Don't be surprised, because a lot of people have moved on. A lot of people want bigger phones because their phones are also their computers. And so they want to watch movies, they want to play games and all of that. So, and they want a long battery life as well. So it doesn't shock me.
So my next question is, if these numbers are correct, do you think there will be another Mini?
No.
You think it might be one and done, iPhone 12 mini and then iPhone 13, and there's three of them.
I think maybe you're going to see one this year again, but that's going to be it. And we're going to go back to getting the SE model every few years.
What do you think, Stephen?
Yes, thank you, John Voorhees, who reached out in the private iMessage. The expression I was looking for was inversely proportional to. Thank you, John. That is English. Yes.
He's an editor.
That is
one
very,
true John.
Very good English. Thank you, John.
One true John.
Man, that's a good expression. Thanks, John. So yeah, maybe this year we're going to get the 13 mini.
12S mini. 12S mini.
12S. Ooh, that's
14.
That's a name. 12.
They're going straight to 14. They're going to skip 13. iPhone 14.
Yeah, I don't think it would be a one and done. I could see Apple doing kind of what Federico is suggesting, where the mini gets an update, and then maybe next time they redesign the case, it gets rid of it. You know, whether that be 2 years from now or 3 years from now, whenever it may be. There's maybe also a world where they do it this year and then like the mini and the SE kind of get folded into the same thing and it just becomes the iPhone mini and it is sort of a standalone thing. And maybe they don't have to update it every year after that, but they sort of somehow take the more affordable phone and the small phone, but with good tech and kind of merge them somehow. Because it is a little weird that they've got the SE2 and the mini. And they do compete pretty directly with each other, at least for some shoppers. So I don't know. I don't think it'll be a one and done, but is this going to be a phone that we see from here on out? Is there going to be four new iPhones every year? If that number is true and that number is consistent throughout the 12 mini's life cycle, I don't know if Apple would keep that up.
5% is not a lot of percent.
No, but it is 5% of a ginormous number.
And that's the balance.
And so it
right?
is still a lot of phones, but not percentage wise.
So like I feel like 5% for me, while it's small, is as you say, because of the absolute unit sales might make it worth it. But I could imagine that they may say kind of like what Federico suggested, let's give it another go. We'll give it another year, see what happens. And then maybe we readjust what this product is in the lineup. Like, we will still want to sell it, but maybe we don't want to put the engineering effort in every year for one of these.
I think something else to consider here is anytime there's a new phone design, so like with the iPhone 10 or now this cycle with the 12, people who are enthusiasts are always more likely to upgrade, period. In a year, right? But especially in a year where there's a new design. And I just have to imagine that people who see the new design and say, okay, I'm going to upgrade my phone this year, even if I wouldn't have otherwise, they may be the same consumers who are drawn to something like the 12 Pro or the 12 Pro Max anyways. And so I wonder if this were year two or year three of the new hardware design, would the mini be accounting for a larger percentage just because those people who jump on board early with a new design are sort of filtered out? I think part of this could be answered by the fact that these are January numbers and the phone's been out for a couple of months, but I can't help but think that it would rise naturally over time as the enthusiasts kind of have what they want and maybe people who don't upgrade as often, who maybe still have a smaller phone, maybe they're still on something like an iPhone 7 or 8, and they don't upgrade that often. They just buy a phone when there's breaks or when it dies or whatever, and they move to the 12 mini naturally over a longer period of time. And so maybe your point, Mike, is give another year and see what it does. Maybe it could end up being better for the mini year two or three in because of these other factors.
But again, it's depending on the fact that the non-enthusiast customer wants the small phone. And I don't know, we don't know, if that actually is true, right? I think it's an assumption that's made, but I can just as easily make the inverse assumption that like bigger phones seems like it's worth it to you. You may already have a phone which is large, right? Like if you're coming from like an iPhone 6, the iPhone mini is physically smaller. I mean, you've lived with the iPhone 6, so maybe you just want to get a 12. I don't know. We'll find out a couple of years, I guess, if the iPhone Mini's still updated every year.
Yeah, if it goes away, we know what happened. You know, and I think like the original iPhone SE, the people who have the Mini are probably more likely to love their phone than people who have the others. Maybe the Max, maybe it's on either end, the Mini and the Max. The people in the middle maybe have slightly dampened feelings. But I remember with the original SE, I mean, people held on to that forever. It was an iPhone 6S inside, and people held on to it for a really long time because they were so in love with the form factor. And again, this is partially anecdotal because my wife has a 12 Mini. She really loves it. I think people who are attracted to small phones and who want the size and portability, like that's the most important thing to them, right? And but those other factors are maybe less important. And so I would guess that people who have the Mini really love it and would be really sad to see Apple get rid of it. But time does move on, and Apple has killed beloved products many, many times before.
But I guess one of the main differences between the SE and the Mini is every time they've had an SE, the stories are always that they can't keep them in stock, right? That always, the demand is always too strong for the SE, and that doesn't seem to have happened yet for the Mini.
Well, maybe if they scale down production a little bit, that would even out. I mean, who knows? That's a complicated metric.
Whatever it was, if this is the case, Apple thought it was going to do better than it has, we would assume.
Yes. I think we can agree on that.
Yeah.
Four iPhones is so many new phones. I mean, it's bananas.
I agree with the strategy. iPhones, like, just do loads of them. Because it's how you continue to grow it, if that's what you want to do. You've got to start leaning into the niches. But really, there's only one niche that they're leaning into. Because people think the Max is a niche, and it is not. Like, you know, I think it's about time people realize that, like, there's a lot of thought like, oh, the Max is a big phone. Oh, it's like just for people that want big phones. No, no, no. Like, the Max drives a lot of these. Like, it's a big seller worldwide. But it's like this blinkered view that it's a niche phone when it's not. It's the best one.
Said the guy with the iPhone 12 Max.
What do you think?
Let's take an ad break.
Yeah, there you go. There we go. See, he's done it again. He's going to edit that out again.
This episode of Connected is brought to you by Mack Weldon. The new normal uniform has a lot of us searching our closets and drawers for men's essentials that aren't there. Instead of the usual business casual button-up and jeans, it's soft-knit polos, tees, joggers, and active shorts. Whatever men's basics you need, Mack Weldon has you covered with unmatched comfort and fit. I love everything I've ever picked up from Mack Weldon. I've got several pairs of their shorts. I've got, of course, the amazing sweatpants, which are just fantastic. Everything I've tried from them is super comfortable and very durable. Everything holds up really well, much better than other brands I've tried over the years. Whether you're shopping for socks, shirts, hoodies, underwear, polos, or active shorts, Mack Weldon promises comfort and a consistent fit so you can look great and feel great. From working out, going to work, or on a date, Mack Weldon is for everyday life. And with a wide range of customized fabrics like dry knit and warm knit, your garments will keep up with you no matter what your day looks like. And don't forget to join Weldon Blue, the totally free loyalty program. Level 1 gets you free shipping for life, and once you reach level 2 by spending $200, you get 20% off every order for the next year. Mack Weldon wants you to be comfortable, so if you don't like your first pair of underwear, you can keep them, and they'll still refund you, no questions asked. For 20% off your first order, visit mackweldon.com/connected and enter the promo code CONNECTED. That's mackweldon.com/connected, promo code CONNECTED for 20% off. Mack Weldon is reinventing men's basics. Our thanks to Mack Weldon for the support of the show and Relay FM. Topic number 2, Twitter subscription rumored. What's going on here, Mike?
According to a report from Bloomberg, Twitter is continuing to consider a subscription product. They've mentioned this before. I think it was on a recent earnings call that they were looking into it. And then there's also some job postings that came up, and it seems like it's continuing. There's an internal team at Twitter called Rogue One, which is the team that's looking at the potential subscription options, according to this Bloomberg report. And they've got a few different things that they're considering. But the reason that they're doing this is kind of twofold. Apparently, it's to lessen the reliance on advertising going forward and also to combat a slowing of new user growth. And these two things kind of go together. They can't make more money in advertising if they're not bringing on enough new people. So there's five things that are listed in this article that are being considered currently. One is tipping. So if Federico has a really good tweet, I could throw him $2 or whatever, I guess. Like, good tweet. And then you give him a little coin or something, which would be nice. I wouldn't mind that. I could imagine the animations being pretty cool, you know? Right? You know, like maybe you, it's kind of like, I think of like Twitch here. Like, imagine you pay Twitter like $5 a month and you get a bunch of credits that you can then give to Twitter users, like a Reddit Gold or whatever, right? You could pay for exclusive content. So, I don't know, something between like OnlyFans and a newsletter. Oh, I don't
that's
know.
some crossover of content.
You know, anything in between. But it's like, I don't know, like, you want my hot takes, you got to give me $5 a month for my hot takes. Otherwise, you just get tepid takes. All the hot takes are behind the paywall, I suppose.
Right.
They're considering charging for TweetDeck, which just makes so much sense. I don't know why they haven't done that already. Like, TweetDeck is very much a company-focused app, right? Like, it's like for social media managers. Like, I don't know why they haven't done that already. Something called undo send, which I literally have no idea what this means. It's just deleting. Like, I don't know what undo send is as an option for people that give you money.
I think it's just deleting, which even in the official Twitter app doesn't work super well. Like, you can delete a tweet, but it's still like cached for people who saw it already sometimes, and sometimes it's not. So maybe it's just making that better.
Yeah, maybe. I could imagine this being the thing, like, hey, it's not editing. It's like the thing that Twitterific does this, right? Where like you can press undo and all it does is just delete the tweet that you just sent and paste it back onto a new tweet window. It's like a kind of a hacky way, but they might do something like that. And then enhanced profile customization, whatever that means.
Yeah, I want to make it like my MySpace page from 10 years ago.
Oh, yeah, you could put your top 8 follows.
I want to do that. I want to put all kinds of crazy stuff up there.
Oh, my God. You could go there, music starts playing.
Yeah.
Confetti starts falling from the page.
You've like described MySpace.
Like a GeoCities page of sorts also.
It's
like
just MySpace, but Twitter.
Yeah.
Oh, so good.
Man, MySpace was the one true social network, and it all started going to, you know, after that.
It's like, I remember this. I think we spoke about it on the show, but I saw this as a meme once, and I loved it. Like, Tom was just, like, the best founder. He just sold out and disappeared, right? Like, he didn't try and take over the world or anything.
He doesn't care. He didn't open a big campus, you know, with all kinds of facilities. Just cashed out. Retired. I think he's a photographer now. Doesn't care.
Yeah.
Takes pictures of at the beach of the mountains. So that's the life. You're like, I'm out.
this is terrible.
This
I'm
is
off.
What have I done?
So we have this list of things. What would make you want to pay for Twitter?
Yeah. If I could mute specific kinds of people, like for example, people who interject when they're not necessarily part of a conversation,
right?
Or people who make fun of your music choices, or people who have to ruin any good moment with a, well, actually, you know, I don't want to have specific, like, if I could mute certain attitudes, that would be terrific. Like, use some kind of natural language parsing or whatever, like mute certain sentiments. You do some sentiment analysis on tweets, and you're like, hey, do you want to mute angry people? Yes. Do you want to mute annoying people? Yes. Like, that sort of thing. Is that possible? Like, can I have a filter for annoying people?
I don't know. How would that work?
Like, I mean, with machine, like, I'm only half joking. Like, sentiment analysis is a real thing.
They have the quality filter, so, you know.
They have the quality filter for, like, curse words and that kind of stuff, like more generic approach to, you know, I don't want folks who are gonna bother me in my mentions or in my timeline.
So I would say, on a similar vein, I would love like mute filters or filters for tweets about a specific type of topic,
mm-mm.
which doesn't include hashtags, right? So, like, I could just be like, no Super Bowl.
Yes.
And it just goes away, right? And, you know, it's not outside of the realm of possibility that you could have a decent go at that, right? Like, as a, you know, you wouldn't be 100% perfect. Things would get caught up. Things would slip through. But it's not an impossibility to do something like this. Just like certain words that are used or whatever, you know? So, like, it seems like something that is theoretically possible. Sentiment analysis is a thing that exists and would be, of course, tricky to implement, but again, not an impossibility. What would make you pay for Twitter, Stephen?
I mean, I would like an ad-free experience in the first-party app, but yep. I'm fine with ads. Like, it's not a big deal. But thinking through other things, like, yeah, I would like to be able to support creators, or if I see something that I like, or, you know, you see the thing pretty often where, like, people have a GoFundMe or something, like better integration for that kind of stuff. Like, that doesn't have to be paid, but it's like Twitter could do so much more. The thing that blows me away about Twitter is they have the world's simplest social media network, and they were the slowest to make changes to it. And I understand they've got complicated problems. I mean, they just kicked that guy off not too long ago, but it just, they seem so afraid of changing their product in any way. Mike, you texted us the other day that Twitter told you'd been on the service for 14 years.
Yeah.
Like, imagine what Facebook was 14 years ago.
Well, I know what it was. I don't think it existed. Right? Like, or like it was just for colleges or whatever point yes. it was then.
Yeah, I was on it whenever it rolled out to my university, right? Very simple and very basic, and it has basically nothing to do. It was better. It was much better.
Yeah.
It basically nothing to do with what Facebook is now. And Twitter just, like, they just talk about this stuff. And I think if they offered a service that combined some of these things, I think some people would be interested in it. I think especially like news organizations and brands and that sort of thing. Like, yeah, like build more things on top of Twitter, like TweetDeck or things like Buffer. There's other services out there.
Well, there's also that newsletter thing that they just bought, right?
Yes.
Review or something. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, implement that quickly and do it well, because yeah. Substack exists on the back of Twitter, right? Like, so many, like, Twitter has these just catastrophic failings where businesses have supported themselves, like entire new industries, on the back of Twitter with things Twitter should have done, right? Like Meerkat, and then Periscope, and then Twitter, like, just swept, like, Meerkat's legs from under it and then couldn't capitalize, right? And it's like, I don't understand. These things happen. Like, Substack is the one right now, right? Everyone's creating these newsletters, and they exist because people have Twitter followings, and they promote their newsletter, and they promote clips of their, like, little screenshots of some of their newsletter or whatever, and then people sign up. And it's like, this entire business exists and, like, is grown from Twitter as a marketing tool, but they should have done it. Twitter is text, right? Like, this should have been a thing they did years ago.
Up next, number 6, iOS 14.5 and music services.
Oh God, we're finishing on the most boring one. The wheel has ruined everything.
Okay, so I assume I'm going to be talking about this one. So
this is all you, buddy.
The internet discovered a few days ago that in the latest, in the beta of iOS 14.5, you can now set a different music streaming service, a different default music streaming service on your device. It's kind of broken right now. It's working for some. It's working for some apps. There's a few broken things that we need to mention. So in iOS and iPadOS 14.5, you can now do things like playing music via Spotify directly using Siri without having to say, for example, in Spotify as an additional part of the command. And you can do this in a couple of different ways. The way that I did it which is not working for other people, but it did for me. I said to Siri, change my music streaming service, and it let me pick from a series of apps installed on my device. Now, it was kind of weird because it brought up a list of music players as well as podcast clients. Mm. So, for example, in the same list, I had Spotify and Castro, YouTube, Amazon Music, and Overcast. Like, it was a whole collection of things. When you pick one, Siri will then say, I need to access your Spotify data. If I have to do this, you confirm that. And then once you confirm that, you can ask for anything. So you can search for songs, you can play playlists, you can play albums, you can shuffle playlists, and it just works. And it defaults to Spotify or whatever music streaming service you pick. And you don't have to say anything else. You just say play, for example, Live Forever by Oasis, and it takes that from Spotify and it plays music. Really well done. The thing is, it is kind of weird right now, and it's beta 1. So I assume we're going to clarify how this works by the final release. There's no way to do this without Siri. It's not like changing your default browser or your default email application in iOS 14, where you go to a page in settings and you say, this is my, you know, music app, for example, or this is my podcast app.
Yeah.
Right now, there's no page. You only do this with Siri. And it seems that the way that it works is, your default becomes whatever you pick and give act, like the latest option, like the last option you choose becomes your default. So then later, if you say play, I don't know, what's a good, My Chemical Romance on Apple Music, then from that point on, it's going to default to Apple Music.
So then if you just say play Kings of Leon, it's going to be Apple Music. Right.
But so you can switch that with Siri, but there's no explicit way to go to settings and say, let me choose either Spotify or Apple Music. Mm. So whatever your last request is, for example, right now it's using Spotify for me. But then if I say play Kings of Leon on Apple Music, it's going to switch. And then my next request is going to default to Apple Music. I think this is the way that it works right now. What's also kind of confusing is that both music players and podcast apps come up in the list. However, those two things are separate. I can also ask to play podcasts in Castro, but play music in Spotify. So I think Apple is combining this for obvious reasons, because Spotify has both music and podcasts, and because both of these, like these applications, they fall under the audio domain and the media domain. So I get it. But you can split those. And right now, I'm using Castro, and you can request specific episodes, and you can request, like, play the latest episode of Cortex, for example. And for me, it defaults to Castro to do that.
That's cool.
Do that now. It's very cool.
Now, they never announced this, right? Like, this...
And here's my sort of a theory, but also, like, public discussion. I want to hear from developers or folks who know about this. What I'm confused about right now is whether this is based on the same API that is available on the HomePod for third-party music streaming services or not. My theory is that this is based on standard SiriKit media intents. On HomePod, there is an API for developers to become a compatible third-party music streaming service. And that is an API that talks directly to the music streaming service. Spotify is not part of that. Spotify, I believe at the moment, cannot be set as a default option on the HomePod, but it can be set up in iOS 14.5 beta. So I think the two technologies are different. Like, it's two different kinds of integrations. And what I think is happening right now is, and I say this because Castro works the same way, it's using the existing SiriKit support for media intents, and it's simply letting you switch the default in Siri. So it's taking an existing technology of iOS, an existing API of iOS, and allowing you to change the default in iOS 14.5. The fact that once you ask a few of these commands, you open Shortcuts, you open the Shortcuts app, and you see Siri Shortcuts for those commands is another indication that it is based on this system. So for example, right now, if I open shortcuts and I search for Spotify, I'm going to see a Siri shortcut for play my Discover Weekly, which is one of the commands that I asked to Siri yesterday. And it's now a suggestion in the shortcuts app. So what I think is happening here is Apple is taking the existing API that they launched in iOS 12 or 13 for SiriKit Media Intents, and it's gonna let and it's letting you change the default in Siri. What is also confusing right now is certain commands, like for example, if you ask Spotify to like a song or to add a song to a playlist, it says Spotify hasn't added support for this feature yet. So it seems very in the early stages. My interpretation of this is that the HomePod integration and the iOS 14.5 integrations are different. I think it's all using the current SiriKit Media API for iOS and iPadOS, and it's letting you change the default in a kind of confusing way because you have to do this in Siri. There is no page in settings to say, Castro is my podcast player and Spotify is my music player. You have to configure everything via voice, which makes sense, but also I wish there was a more official and visual way. Does it make sense what I described? It's kind of confusing.
No, I get it. It seems that what's happening is it's using the SiriKit system.
Yeah.
And to be on the HomePod, even if it is using the SiriKit system, it's almost like CarPlay where you have to get Apple to say, yes, you're allowed to do this, right? Like no one can just rock up and be the default music provider on HomePod for whatever reason. They've made this kind of thing where you have to be able to work directly with Apple to have access to this, where I believe SiriKit is just a thing that you can implement, provided that you're an app within one of the categories that's listed. But like the thing that is intriguing to me is like, so Apple announced two things, right, over the last year or so. It was email and web browsers you could set as third parties, and that you would be able to have third parties on HomePod. But this idea of choosing your music service and podcast service on the iPhone, I don't recall that ever being spoken about until now. And Apple isn't even talking about it. People have just found it. This isn't in like anything that 14.5 to this point is even suggesting is a thing you can do, right? So it's intriguing here because it's like, why is it happening now? And what are they going to do about it? Like, what are they doing about it? What is it for? That's what I can't get my head around.
The thing in the background of all of this is antitrust, right? Like, oh, you can only use Apple's Smart Assistant with Apple's media services. Mm-hmm. And this has been a big complaint of Spotify and others. I mean, if they just open the door, they announce it, or even if they don't announce it, it takes pressure off from that angle. I could see a world where Spotify doesn't announce it either, though. Like, they like arguing with Apple. But given that it already seems to work, they've already done work for this to work. I think it's just going to roll out into the world and someone will announce it at some point and then people will be happy.
What I think is also interesting here, this is actually something that I was trying to look for it. I am 100% certain that we made this very specific argument on Connected a couple of years ago, where we said, wouldn't it be interesting if Apple allowed you to change default apps, but only in the context of Siri? Like, change my default in Siri. And this is what they're doing now with music players and podcast apps, right? But if you are using, in fact, the existing SiriKit integration, and you're just changing the default, why not do that for all the other SiriKit domains?
Yeah.
So Todoist, for example, it's using the To-Do and List API. Wouldn't it be nice if I could switch the default reminder application from Reminders to Todoist? Similarly, for note-taking, there's a SiriKit domain for note-taking. You could switch your default note-taking app from Notes to, I don't know, Craft or something. Once you do this for music and podcasts, and if you are, in fact, using that API, why not do that for all the other SiriKit domains?
So what's so special about audio?
Exactly. I mean, arguably, it's going to be even easier to, you know, to do that for like to-do apps and note-taking apps. There's fewer ramifications involved.
Yeah.
For those apps.
There's less libraries to get used to and all that kind of stuff.
Right. And I mean, in this case, Spotify, what you're doing is you're querying an application and you're saying, search for this song from this artist, and then return the song. It's like, it's more complicated, right?
Yeah.
So I think at this point, if you're going to do that for music and podcasts, you should do it for all kinds of circuit integrations from, note-taking, to-do apps. What else is there? Sending money, right? There's a Sirikit domain for payments. So you could change your default from Apple Pay to Venmo or something.
Is there one for messaging?
Yes, there is one for messaging. So I wonder, like, has a lid been lifted here? And will we soon be able to change all kinds of defaults in Siri?
With Sirikit.
It's interesting. We'll see. Meanwhile, I also want to mention real quick something that Spotify is doing. We talked about Spotify a few weeks ago regarding my switch from Apple Music, and I said that the single feature that I missed the most from Apple Music is real-time lyrics, and it seems like Spotify is finally rolling out this functionality. It's been available in 20-something countries for a while, but not in any of the big markets, and specifically not in the US. So as of yesterday, Spotify has expanded its limited beta test, as they call it, of live lyrics to some users in the United States. And this is kind of a strange story. Spotify used to have a deal with an Italian company called Music Match that does real-time lyrics a few years ago. And real-time lyrics used to be available in Spotify on desktop, I believe, via powered by Music Match. Then their deal expired, and now they have a new deal. And Spotify and Music Match is going to power real-time lyrics in Spotify again, including on mobile devices. So it looks the way that it works on iOS and I assume on Android, you will get this new UI in the Now Playing screen, and you will be able to swipe across from the Now Playing, sort of from the cover art to the animated cover art, which is called Canvas in Spotify. And the third tab will be lyrics. And this will be live, real-time lyrics, and sort of like in Apple Music, that follow the song you're listening to.
Turns out, Music Match powers Apple Music's lyrics, they say on their website.
Well, not completely. I think Apple is also doing a lot of like in-house lyrics.
Right, but they're at least using their data. Instagram uses it. And hey, Federico, Music Match is an Italian company.
I just told you that. It's an Italian company.
Sorry, I was reading it and must have not heard you.
It's based in Bologna. I know the founder. They're really good guys. Yes.
I was too busy looking it up and surprised.
It's one of the few Italian success stories that I really appreciate. I absolutely cannot wait for this. I don't have access to it yet, unfortunately, even though I have my, US account, and even though I try to log in with a VPN set to Chicago, pretending once again to be John Voorhees on the internet.
We've all been there.
We've all impersonated John once or twice.
Our Music's Match works with everyone.
Yeah.
Huh. Cool company.
I think they also powered the deal when you like ripped a CD in iTunes and it pulled the track listing. I think that was same company.
Huh.
And there's a Music Match app which you can use right now for but it's a standalone app. If you're listening to Spotify and you open Music Match on your phone, you will see the current Spotify song you're listening to. However, it's kind of like the Music Match app is trying to do too many things at once. Like they have a social component and they have a crowdsourced lyrics component. Like, I don't really care about any of that stuff. I just want to see real-time lyrics in my music player. So I'm looking forward to getting this beta test eventually or the official rollout. It's even like, if once they do this, all of my the majority of my concerns surrounding the switch from Apple Music to Spotify will be set aside. I think I'm really missing lyrics in my music player. So hopefully soon, hopefully this year.
I would like to read the list of founders, their names, because there's just a great selection of names. It's very beautiful Italian names. Massimo Chiocciola?
Chiocciola, yes, that I know him, yeah.
Gianluca Delicari.
Uh-huh.
Valero Paolini. Valerio.
Okay.
Francesco Delfino and Giuseppe Constantino.
Giuseppe, not Giuseppe.
Sorry, Giuseppe Constantino. Yes. That's the most Italian sounding to me.
Yeah, Giuseppe Costantino.
Mm-hmm.
It's very Italian sounding.
It's like, yes, he walked out of a sitcom or something. It's an incredibly Italian name. It's a very
Italian name. Costantino is a really good last name.
What does it mean?
Well, it's from the Roman emperor, right? Mm-hmm. That's what it means.
Right. It means I'm a Roman emperor.
Well, it means you're a... what's the adjective? Imperial? Is that an adjective? I don't know. You're of imperial descent. I don't know.
It turns out, according to Robot MLG in the Discord, iTunes used Gracenote. I'm sorry, I was wrong.
Yes, Gracenote
database.
Yeah,
Music Smash was founded in 2010. I didn't want to be the one to have to tell you that.
You were just going to leave me hanging out there for feedback all week?
It was too late at that point. I didn't have the answer either way, but I assumed it wasn't correct because it was 2010. You've yet to anger the listeners yet, so
I know
you've got to work on that in our final topic, the barn burner topic.
Let me spin the wheel and see what it says.
Don't spin the wheel. There's no need to spin the wheel.
Number three. All right, topic number three. Mm-hmm. Apple has opened a repair extension program for a select number of MacBook Pros with battery issues, which is a real bummer if you have one of these. So these are 2016 and some 2017 MacBook Pros. The battery won't charge past 1%, which is not enough of a percentage to have. The battery will also report that service is recommended in the battery mini bar item.
Yeah, you know, no kidding.
Yeah.
Wow. The real smarts in that battery.
Uh-huh.
Does it actually not charge, or is it just reporting?
So here's what's weird about this. Okay. So I'm gonna read a little bit from this page, because trying to figure out what happened here is difficult. If your 2016 or 17 MacBook Pro exhibits these behaviors, contact Apple to get your battery replaced free of charge. Your computer will be examined prior to service to verify it is eligible for the free battery replacement. And normally what happens, if you've paid for this in the past and you go to Apple, normally they'll waive it or figure something out. Here's the next paragraph from Apple. Apple has also released a macOS update that prevents this issue from happening to other 2016 and 17 MacBook Pro computers. Please update to macOS Big Sur 11.2.1 or install the Catalina 10.15.7 supplemental update.
So, wait.
Yeah. So, was software killing these batteries?
How is that possible? If it's happened to you, the only way to have it fixed is to have the battery replaced.
Right. But if you update, it shouldn't happen to you in the future.
What?
I know for years Apple has done adaptive charging on their batteries. So there's a little controller that sits between the battery and the system and says, this is the battery level in all the cells. And then it cuts off charging or reduces charging, all these different things, right? To try to protect battery life. I think that came out in the first unibody, like 17-inch MacBook Pro. Whatever the first one was with the battery sealed in, this was part of the trade-off. So maybe something in macOS or I guess it's got to be macOS or maybe firmware somehow cooked a small percentage of these batteries where the system won't let them charge past 1% and then it's fixed in this. But these machines, some of them are now 5 years old, almost 4.5 years old. So like, what happened that some of these batteries got stuck with this problem? It's very strange. Very strange.
Man, just another thing to add on to these beloved computers.
Yeah, right. It's like a footnote on a terrible era.
I can't get my head around this. Like, what must have happened? I guess it's not the battery that's the problem. It's like the system can't read it, and so is just doing weird stuff. Surely. I don't understand it. It's very weird. I see this battery health thing a lot, or whatever they call it, the like as I keep my MacBook Pro plugged in all the time, so it's never charged. Or it's like you see it on AirPods now too, right? Where it's trying to like make sure that it doesn't charge too much, because even like the AirPods, to make sure that the battery's lost.
Yeah.
I mean, Apple has gone all in on that after those issues that they had.
Yeah.
With the battery stuff.
So I would say if you're running a machine that's covered by this and you're on Catalina or Big Sur, go to software update and save your battery's life.
That's wild.
It really, really unusual. 1%. That, I mean, I'm sure it's terrible if you have this happen, but it's kind of funny to think about what possibly went wrong.
If this has happened to you, you're a listener, this has happened to you, I want to know, does the machine stay on but stay at 1% for like an hour, right? Or does it just die immediately?
Yeah.
Right? Like, is it only charging 1%, or does the system think it's only 1% so it won't stop screaming at you, but it will keep running? Yeah.
I mean, Apple says that the battery, an issue with the battery not charging past 1%. So my guess is it would just die very quickly.
Right. It's not the indication. It's the actual fact that it will not charge.
I bet it has something to do with that charging management they do. But anyways, run software update.
Before we finish, after that absolute incredible end to the show, thank you for disrupting the order as you did.
You're welcome.
You've yet to take the pledge of angering listeners.
I'm a man of the people.
Well, you're not going to do it. You're going to leave me and Federico just out there.
What should I say?
I don't know. You got some kind of unpopular opinion.
Each of you give me several examples of things that could make people mad, and I'll pick from one of them.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, that's very smart. Yeah, nice try. I can't believe you're just gonna leave us. This is a betrayal.
Is it?
Federico, do you feel betrayed?
Yes.
Do you see how sad he is? That sigh.
Of all people who could have betrayed me, you know, this one I was not expecting.
Yeah, it was your fiance. Babe.
Oh, yeah, I forgot that you two got engaged during this episode.
I'm already texting my lawyer and filing for divorce and asking for a really, really chunky settlement.
You're only engaged.
All right. You're gonna get 18 power books is what you're going to get.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, it would suck to get half of your estate.
I know you got your secret stash of cash in your home studio, Walter White. I'm on to you. Don't worry about it.
I'm going to do my thing. So if you want to find links to stuff we spoke about, they are over on the website at relay.fm/connected/332. While you're there, I'll just point out that there are some buttons at the top of the page where you can join Connected Pro, which is an ad-free, longer version of the show each and every week. And like all Relay FM memberships, comes with a bunch of cool perks, including member-only podcasts and access to our Discord, where a bunch of people are hanging out right now, just waiting for you to show up. We're all waiting for you, dear listener, to join us. So join, become a member of Connected Pro.
And you'll find out why Steven's going to be encased in ice for eternity.
That's right. That was the topic today.
Mm-hmm. That's what we spoke about.
You can find us all out on the open internet. You can find Federico on Twitter at Vitici, V-I-T-I-C-C-I, and he's the editor-in-chief of Backstories.net. Federico, I have a question for you.
Okay.
If you were to be absorbed by Kirby, what power would Kirby gain?
This is not from your usual list of questions.
No, it's not. This is handcrafted.
Can you imagine if this was in the list?
What is my power? I think that's...
Yeah, did you say... Discord's picking this up. Did you say backstories?
Editor-in-chief of backstories.net. Of backstories.net. Backstories.
I heard backstories and the Discord has exploded into backstories.
Did I say backstories?
I thought that it must have been a Skype issue.
What is backstories?
You said backstories.
Like, it's actually a very good name for a website that tells you the backstories of what we do. In any case, what is my power? So
yeah.
Kirby, if we were to absorb me, would gain the power of... I don't know. What would he gain? Like really good headphones, or
is that your power?
No, I guess my I don't know. What is my power? Kirby would start, you know, completing all the levels of the video games via automation. Maybe the power of automating things, or the power of it would gain the Steven. It would gain the power of love. That's the power Kirby would get from me.
Huey Lewis sang about. Backstories.net is taken. That's a bummer. I was going to buy it and redirect it to John's Twitter account.
Ian had a really good suggestion. Kirby would have a beard, tattoos, and he'd be very passionate.
Very passionate. Gain the power of passion. That's not love. It's passion, baby.
Yes, I take back and I accept Ian's suggestion.
Passionate
beard,
picks.
Tattoos, and passion.
Passion picks.
All right, that's good. You can find Mike on Twitter as I-M-Y-K-E. Mike is on Twitch doing a bunch of keyboard stuff. Twitch.tv/Mike Hurley.
Yeah, Mike.live. That's the
Mike.live.
Mm-hmm. Nice and easy.
Doesn't even sound like a website, but it is a website.
But it is.
Mike.live. Mm-hmm. Mike hosts a bunch of other shows here on Relay FM as well, so go check out all of those. You can find me on Twitter and Twitch as ISMH.
Boo. I'm booing you now because of your
Why
betrayal.
Why are you booing me?
Because you're a betrayal. You betrayed us in this episode. So now I'm going to boo you through your entire, like, talk about yourself. Federico, will you join me when he starts doing it again to boo him, please?
Yeah.
All right.
Absolutely.
Carry on, Stephen.
You can find me writing on 512pixels.net.
Boo.
Boo. Boo. Boo.
Yeah, I have a tip for you, Stephen. Go to google.com and Google the word mutiny. And you will see what's happening here.
Yeah.
With me and Mike.
Yeah.
We're done. We're tired of your...
Oh, I misspelled mutiny. This isn't
looking
very nice.
That's how you
nice.
Get around it.
Yeah.
You misspell
your censorship.
It.
Wow.
Yep.
Yes.
Mutiny is a revolt among a group of people to oppose, change, or overthrow an organization to which they were previously loyal. That sounds about right.
I'd like to thank our sponsors this week, Hover and Mac Weldon. Until next week, guys, say goodbye.
Arrivederci.
Cheerio.
Bye, y'all.